Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Former President Barack Obama visited Ohio last week and called on Ohio voters to get out the vote. 3,000 faithful packed the East Professional Center Gymnasium in Cleveland to hear the former president support Democrat Rich Cordray for governor and to defend his own economic record in office.
And by the time I left office, wages were rising and poverty and uninsured rates were falling. So just remember that when you hear these folks bragging about this economic miracle, just remember when it started.
Joining us is Ohio Public Radio's State House News Bureau reporter, Andy Chow. Welcome back, Andy.
Hi.
Father of two.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Doing well. Thank you.
And Dayton Daily News correspondent Laura Bischoff, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Ballmer, welcome back.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
All right. So that made the news last week that President Obama, A, was hitting the stump, which is kind of unusual, the most, you know, as the most recent former president, and also that he was defending his record. Andy Chow, it didn't feel surprising to me. What about you?
Well, I think the thing here is that I think President Barack Obama has spent the last year and a half trying to stay as quiet as possible when it comes to criticizing the Trump administration. And I think you hear pundits every day adding their two cents about what President Trump is doing. And like you said, it's usually former president etiquette to not criticize the current administration. So I think the fact that he is now out campaigning has a lot of people opening their ears because I think they want to hear what President Barack Obama has to say.
You know, the etiquette is not to come out trashing the new administration, but likewise, it's usual etiquette not to trash the previous administration once you actually enter office. And Jesse Ballmer, it seems like everything's topsy-turvy.
A little bit, yeah. I think it's common for former presidents to campaign for candidates, so it's not entirely surprising that he would come and campaign for Rich Cordray. Cordray endorsed Barack Obama early before other Ohio Democrats were doing so. Ted Strickland, for example, endorsed Hillary Clinton in the 2008 Democratic primary for president. And so the fact that he's here for Rich Cordray is not surprising, but the fact that he's really taking so many hits at President Trump is perhaps more so. I don't think it's surprising that they're talking about the economy so much because Quinnipiac University had a recent poll that said 70% of people feel either good or excellent about the economy. And so that's something Republicans are really trying to capitalize on. And I think Obama is getting in there and saying, you know, not so fast. This started before President Trump was in office.
Usually the incumbent gets the blame or the credit for an economy that's buzzing along. But there was a report just recently in which I guess a Republican pollster, Neil Newhouse, was saying that the problem with going in the midterms is not the economy. The economy is buzzing right along. The problem is Donald Trump. A lot of people do not like the president. He's a very polarizing figure. And I think that Barack Obama is probably, you know, the Democrats' best voice to get out there and inspire voters to go to the polls. I don't see it, you know, bringing Hillary Clinton out on the stump as a good strategy because she's, you know, also a very polarizing figure.
And I think this is the thing that voters are going to see a lot of coming up to Election Day is the Republican Party has made it very clear that their strategy, their talking points is going to be separating themselves from Trump's rhetoric and attaching to his policies. And so something like the economy that people are perceiving to that people perceive to be doing really well. The Republicans want to attach themselves to the things that are happening in federal government, such as the economy doing well, but separating themselves from his rhetoric and his bombastic claims and the things that get him in trouble as far as like what he says in the media.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. We're talking politics. We're just, what, 6 or 7 weeks out from the midterms. And, you know, it's going to sneak up and bite us very, very soon. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. So conversely, is it likely then, Jesse Ballmer, that the Republicans bring out Donald Trump?
I think it's likely that Donald Trump will be in Ohio before the November elections. Whether it will look the same as Cordray and Obama last week with, you know, Mike DeWine going out there and giving a speech about how he's going to be great for Ohio, and then Donald Trump coming on right afterwards and saying, this is my guy, he's going to be great for Ohio. I don't know if it's going to take that format. It hasn't so far.
Right.
Mike DeWine has been at a couple of events with the president recently, the Ohio Republican Party's big fundraising annual dinner. And then he was also at an event for Troy Balderson in the 12th Congressional District, that rally. And so they've been in the same place, but there hasn't been like a Mike DeWine, Donald Trump
this
joint fundraiser. This is my guy. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump Jr. was in Ohio on Thursday doing fundraisers.
You know what? I completely forgot about that.
For Mike DeWine and for Jim Renacci. So they're doing more of that behind the scenes things, unless we're on a podium, hands raised together, giving each other high five situation. So I don't know if we'll see that.
I do think that if we do see the president in Ohio to stump, it'll probably be for Jim Renacci. He's been very vocal saying we need Jim Renacci in the Senate. However, you know, the polls are kind of all over the map on that. There was a poll that came out from Politico and AARP last week, I think, that showed that Sherrod Brown had a 16-point lead. With, I think, 22 or 23% undecided. I'm not sure if that – I think it was registered voters instead of likely voters.
Okay.
So, you know, the race could be closer, but, you know, Mitch McConnell made a statement, kind of like ticked off the list of states where things were close and that they were, you know, looking to invest, and Ohio was not on the list.
I think Trump is a very
– As far as the U.S. Senate race.
U.S. Senate race, correct.
And I think Trump is a very interesting campaign tool because in parts of the state, he's very popular. And so we saw that when he campaigned in the 12th district, I think it worked pretty well in a county like Delaware. But if Trump were to come out and stump for somebody like DeWine, who's running for statewide office, I don't think it would have the positive effect that you would want it to have, because, you know, Ohio as a whole is a purple state where that went for Barack Obama twice, but then ended up going for Trump in this last campaign. So I think it's just hard to tell. And that's why we're seeing him. He'll come back for Balderson, I'm sure, because that's a very Republican district anyway, and it'll play well. I just don't think it plays well statewide.
Except that in the 12th congressional district, they're saying the linchpin are the well-educated female voters in that district, of which there are many. And the president doesn't appeal to those voters. It could be hamper Balderson, couldn't it?
Yeah, I do think that Donald Trump, you know, he's got a very enthusiastic base.
Yes. I mean,
back in early August when he came for that Balderson rally, I mean, there were people that drove in from all over the place, stood outside in 95-degree heat waiting to get into a super sweaty, sweltering gym to listen to the president. I mean, they are 100% behind Donald Trump.
But they're not necessarily from the 12th congressional district.
Not necessarily. However, there's plenty of Donald Trump supporters in that district. It stretches from like Zanesville up through Delaware. But then the Democratic base, you know, I think they're pretty fired up. So it's really a question of who gets the middle and who are they turned off by Donald Trump? Is the middle turned off by Donald Trump? Those you know, people who kind of independents, maybe they're the, you know, the 40, 50-year-old suburban mom who's got a college education who is kind of like, well, usually I'm a Republican, but this guy really I don't like his style.
It's a hard line.
They don't turn out at all.
It's a hard line to walk because you might be a Republican who likes voting Republican, but maybe the presence of somebody like Donald Trump discourages you from turning out. But in that special election that we just saw, it raised a huge amount of awareness for pro-Trump people to say, oh, there's an election coming up. I follow Donald Trump. I now know that there's an election coming up, and I'm going to go out and vote in this special election.
President Trump just generates a huge amount of enthusiasm for both his base and for people who oppose him. And so when you bring him in, it is going to generate, you know, just
it's
some enthusiasm and some
yeah.
interest. And I mean, he can certainly pack a gymnasium in a way that Mike DeWine will never be able to. Similarly, former President Barack Obama can pack a gym in a way that Rich Cordray is never going to be able to. And so getting those people out, reminding them that there's a race, reminding them that John Kasich is term limited and not on the on the ballot this November. I think that's helpful in some ways.
What are you smiling about, Laura?
I remember doing a story after the primary when it was set that it was going to be Mike DeWine against Rich Cordray. And I was thinking, you know, they're kind of ho-hum characters. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a guy named David Niven. He used to be a speechwriter for Ted Strickland. He's a political scientist at University of Cincinnati now. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, like, is this going to light any fires or how, you know, kind of like how boring are these guys? And he goes, well, they're different brands of boring. He said, Mike DeWine's like your grandpa on the front porch. He goes on too long about how much he loves pie. And Rich Cordray is like your accountant who goes on a little too long about why you should take certain tax write-offs.
Wow. Interesting. But voters have to decide between the two of them. And it does seem, you know, you hear these questionnaires, the silly questionnaires that come out. You know, what's your favorite music? That kind of a thing.
The Dispatch just did that, and it was actually pretty entertaining. They asked him, what's your favorite, you know, beer or alcoholic drink? And Mike DeWine's answer was root beer, and Rich Cordray's was grapefruit juice.
Yeah, I just, really?
He's saying this was an opportunity to promote one of the local craft breweries in
course,
Ohio.
Of course, maybe they didn't want to offend anybody. I mean, nowadays there's so many of them, you run the risk of, but you could have just said the best craft beer of the week. I mean,
and
I don't know.
I'll just add the whole, there's also two other candidates, the Green Party's Constance Gunnell Newton, and then the Libertarian candidate, Travis Irvine. So
yeah, I don't know what their favorite drinks are.
No, I don't know.
Well, that may be a way to distinguish themselves. Let's see, Connor in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Connor.
Hi, Ann. So we had the opportunity to drive up to Cleveland and see President Obama speak at the Cordray rally. So we live in Grove City, pretty much where Richard Cordray is from. So I know a lot of Ohioans are having a hard time, and I know we are especially. There are a lot of great things that DeWine is saying and that he could be doing for the state of Ohio, but he's aligned too close to Trump. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, despite living in Grove City, I know a lot of family members, myself included, who would vote for DeWine, but this Trump rhetoric, you know, quite honestly, it's just kind of scary. So, I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that? I mean, is this where we're headed? I mean, as a Republican, you have to be that close to Trump. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I think what Connor just said is exactly what DeWine's dilemma has been this whole time, is that I think he's grappling with how he aligns himself with Trump, because there's a lot of people who, if he does, then he gets a lot of votes, but he would really, you know, discourage a lot of people from voting for him if he does align himself with somebody like Trump and the rhetoric that he's putting out there.
But how can you not? I mean, you then suffer the wrath.
Well, and the really tough spot is when the president says, hey, I'm going to come out to campaign for you, because how do you say no to that? I would guess that might have been the situation Balderson was put in right before the special election, because he didn't seem to be in his campaign ads really aligning himself with Trump too much during the general election. In the primary, he was. But
he said enough publicly about his support for Trump that I would say the cow's out of the barn on that one. So we'll continue our conversation. Connor, thanks for your call. Anybody else? What do you think? Midterms are coming up. Any strong thoughts? 614-292-8513. My guests this hour for our weekly reporter roundtable, Andy Chow, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter. From the Dayton Daily News, Laura Bischoff. And from the Cincinnati Inquirer, Jesse Ballmert, state government reporter. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. Democratic candidates, well, both candidates for governor announced their education plans recently. We're going to talk about that with us today, Dayton Daily News correspondent Laura Bischoff. Also, Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Balmert and Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Andy Chow. They brought out some education plans. This election, to me, considering what the last one was like for governor, this seems so much more substantive. There's actually issues. There's conversations about what they're proposing, and it just reminds me of the Halcyon days.
I would say that maybe this is like a wonky public reporter thing to say, but like it's the most exciting thing about this campaign is when somebody calls you up and say, "Hey, we're rolling out our agenda for this topic or that topic," and then you get to compare notes with the other candidate. So it's been fun to look at those plans
instead of dishing on the latest.
He said, she said, he said, yeah.
Thing. Mm-hmm. Silly thing to happen. But what distinguishes these two proposals? Anyone? Can you give us a thumbnail? Laura?
Well, I went to the Cordray event, and he talked about providing on-site, at school buildings, wraparound services like for mental health, and not just for students, but also for their family members. And then reducing the number of standardized tests that Ohio school kids take to to meet the federal minimum. I'm not sure if that would like do away with things like the third grade reading guarantee.
And Cordray doesn't know either. Because he was asked about it.
And, yeah, we asked if that would be the case, and he wasn't sure. He also said he wants to eliminate for-profit charter schools, and I asked him if he could do that without legislative approval. And he said, you know, essentially TBD, like not sure. I think so, but not sure. So it was a little fuzzy on some of the details.
Yeah, I will say that when you he laid out several specific things, but then if you would press him a little bit further, he wouldn't commit. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have a plan. It's just that, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces, so probably doesn't want to show his whole hand right now. DeWine also said that he wants to reduce standardized tests. He wants to put a bigger focus on vocational training and try to support vocational training at an earlier age to get kids to understand what jobs that they might be suited for, what skills they have. So that sort of goes along the lines of what Governor Kasich has been doing for the past 8 years. And both candidates mentioned some sort of accountability for charter schools. Like Laura said, he would want for Cordray, he would want to make for-profit charter schools start operating as nonprofit entities. And for DeWine, he says that he wants to add more accountability for the way we pay, for the way the state pays online charter schools, and make it a pay for performance model. So if your students aren't learning, then you don't get as much money.
And Cordray also talked about, it looks like directly funding the charter schools.
Versus taking it from the districts.
Versus it flowing through the districts, which is something that has been discussed in charter school reform in Ohio. I know some charter schools are hesitant of that because then it becomes a line item that you can easily eliminate if certain governors don't like charter schools entirely. And another thing they talked about is... most notably in Youngstown, John Kasich really pushed this plan to take over the educational operations of failing school districts. The first one was Youngstown, but there have been a number of other ones across the state. Cordray would want to eliminate that practice.
I know that the report cards came out last week for school districts. There were 14 districts that got an F. I think over in the Dayton area, Trotwood local schools was celebrating because they got like a D and 7F, so they were going to be able to sidestep state takeover for a while.
I think the big thing going into what Cordray and DeWine are proposing as far as education plans are concerned is that they're both trying to emphasize that they would have some stability, whereas they would say, this is what we're going to do, and that's it, and we're not going to make a whole bunch of changes along the way. And I think that harkens to what's been happening the past 8 years. If you talk to teachers in school districts, they say that there's fatigue there because they feel like every year things are changing. For the past couple of years, it's been high school graduation standards where, students were held to a certain standard, and then it looked like not a lot of people were going to graduate, so those standards were reduced. There's just things just keep moving as far as schools go, and so Cordray and DeWine want to say, this is our plan. we're going to stick to the plan, and then we're not going to keep moving it forward.
It sounds like, you know, the dueling studies about red wine. You know, 1 week it's good for you, the next week it's not so good for you, depending on what you get. I mean, think of it, years and years of push for standardized testing and tougher standardized testing and using standardized testing as a sort of Damocles and or the results of the testing, I should say, and now pulling back. Okay, mm-hmm. Too much. When all the experts were telling them all along, you're putting too much standardized testing into play in this all this. They did it anyways. How do you do that? I mean, the legislature is the linchpin here.
Mm. Certainly. And I think it's good to campaign on fewer tests because both children and parents and teachers and, I mean, who really likes taking more standardized testing? So I think it's an easy thing to campaign on. But like you said, this is all the governor proposes his, in this case, plan for what the education system is going to look like in Ohio. And then it goes over to the state legislature and then they're going to decide how much money they're going to put toward it. And obviously, this is back and forth kind of a thing. But neither DeWine's plan nor Cordray's plan would be implemented exactly the way they say it would because mm-hmm. it has to go through the state legislature.
Mm. Yeah. If there's, you know, there's certain things that are for sure in life, death, taxes, and changes in education policy.
Without any real change in outcomes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think the big challenge with reducing standardized tests is that Ohio has been lagging as far as education goes compared to nationally. If you look at, I think it's called Education Week, it's a trade publication. Mm-hmm. 8 years ago, Ohio's schools were ranked 5th in the nation. They're now ranked 21st, 22nd. And so there's this drive among policymakers to improve Ohio's schools, and they want to raise the level of achievement. And I think the challenge is, how do you raise the level of achievement and find out if you're reaching that bar, but also reduce standardized tests? And I think that's where the rub is right now.
Yes. a certain level of standardized tests are needed because you need to know, kind of benchmark, how mm-hmm. are the kids doing? How are they learning what they need to learn? And what other changes do we need to make?
The getting rid of for-profit charter schools or online charter schools, that's not that radical of a proposal. There are but there are other states who do not allow schools to be for-profit and get state funding.
And it would not get rid of online charter schools. It would just make sure that they operated as nonprofits.
Right.
One of the keys, though, is that, you know, you can have the online, you can have the charter school, whether it be bricks and mortar or online, be a nonprofit, and then they hire for-profit service entities that are or are not related to them, which was the case with ECOT, the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow. They had IQ Innovations and a couple other vendors that were
both owned by
they were connected to Bill Lager, the founder of ECOT.
And you're right, it's not. An impossible idea. Other states already ban for-profit charter schools. Mm-hmm. The question here is, how do you get the toothpaste back in the tube where you already have these entities around?
It is a broader question, though, about, you know, are there places in which profit should not be a motive? Education of children, imprisonment. You know, mm-hmm. we have privatization of prisons has been a theme of the Kasich administration, and other states have done this pretty extensively. And there are some people who just think that there should not be a profit motive to locking people up or to educating children.
Something somebody said a few minutes ago, referencing that, I think it was when you were talking about DeWine kind of carrying on the Kasich philosophy mm-hmm. and approach to education in Ohio. It reminded me about what of the Kasich influence in all of this is. He a player in the campaigns. Is are you seeing? I mean, I know we've talked about it before that he hasn't been, but is that going to change? Do you think maybe at a micro level Andy Chow?
Well, you know, when we were talking about the dilemma that DeWine's in as far as having Trump campaign for him, I think that's also the dilemma here with Kasich, that there's a lot of people. Kasich is very popular among a lot of people in Ohio, but then he's also very unpopular among the more conservative Republicans, or maybe not the conservative Republicans, but the
Trump Republicans.
Yeah. So I think it's the same dilemma. And it's interesting because you have these two people. You have DeWine. I'm sorry. You have Trump and Kasich, who are both saying that they support DeWine. But how do you engage that support, and how do you use that to your advantage the best way in a state like Ohio?
I think John Kasich himself has not been very involved, but just the kind of specter of John Kasich has loomed large over this over this race, because it is a weird path that Mike DeWine is going to have to take in between John Kasich and Donald Trump because of their supporters in Ohio. John Kasich has said that he's going to vote for Mike DeWine. We talked with him a few months back and said, essentially, if I put out a advertisement right now, no one would be paying attention during the summer. So whether that means he would be getting on board later in the fall, I'm not entirely sure. But then you also have to look at John Kasich hasn't been endorsing a lot of Republicans recently. He's also looking at his political brand and his political future. And that's another thing that's going to play a factor in who he supports and how strongly he supports them.
And on the other side of the ticket, we have Richard Cordray identifying with John Kasich on some issues. So,
Sure, on issues like Medicaid expansion. Right. You know, I think that John Kasich could be he could help Republicans on the ticket win that middle voter, the independent, the swing voter. But it's a little tricky. And, you know, it does seem like the governor is more interested in the national politics more so than the state politics right now.
Is he having any brown bags with reporters? You know, just meeting with reporters at all in Ohio?
Not that I'm aware of.
In Ohio.
Not local. Yeah. Okay. I mean, he might be for the national outlets, but none that I've heard. Local or statewide.
And it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to have an event last week, this official bill signing of a bill that was signed 2 months ago.
The payday lending bill.
Yeah. With a bunch of Democrats in tow.
Mm-hmm.
And he canceled it at the last minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the backstory was.
Sudden conflict with his schedule.
Yeah, he has an event this week with the Ford CEO and the Midwest Governors Association. They're talking about kind of the future of
smart transportation.
Smart transportation, which has really been an issue John Kasich has been interested in the recent years. But that's not weighing in on the Mike DeWine, Rich Cordray race.
Oh, yeah. By the way, the Ford CEO is Jim Hackett, and he is the brother of Bob Hackett, state senator from London.
You know,
R-London.
Small world.
Speaking of the Kasich era and you know, his record, it seems like his record is not the point of contention among Cordray and DeWine that much. Like, as far as they're campaigning, no one's coming out against what Kasich's done in the past 8 years. I mean, I guess you might hear something about SB5 mentioned here or there at a Democratic event, but I haven't heard much punches thrown from either side at Kasich's record.
No, I think that they're focused on one another.
Mm-hmm.
So there are debates coming up that should be interesting. So the first one is Wednesday at 7 o'clock at the University of Dayton. I'll be on the panel asking questions.
Good.
And then it goes to Marietta College on October 1st and then Cleveland State on October 8th. So we will be asking the candidates. It'll be the first time to really see them, you know, side by side responding to, you know, topics of the day and other questions.
It's nice. It's a nice change. I mean, it's news people that we have gubernatorial debates in Ohio. We didn't have them for a while. So
right. Kasich did not debate Ed Fitzgerald. He did debate Ted Strickland, I recall.
Mm-hmm. I think there was just one, though, right?
There was at least one because I served on the panel for that one. Anyway, it's a good opportunity for voters to see, you know, a direct side-by-side comparison. They're asked basically the same questions, the same topics, and how they think on their feet. I did ask Rich Cordray, you know, what he's doing to prepare for the debate. You know, was he doing some calisthenics, or he's got his index cards out, or he didn't bite on the question.
Who's playing DeWine?
Yeah, who's playing DeWine in the debate prep? I didn't get any details, so he's holding it close to the vest.
Yeah, and this will be helpful for voters. It's worth tuning in. I think most of them are about an hour, so you know, just put it in your schedule.
It won't kill
you.
Tune in and listen, and,
because I think a lot of their issues are similar in some ways, and so being able to look at the nuance is going to be valuable. And especially if we want candidates to focus on policy and substance as opposed to, you know, bombastic claims and personality, then I think we have to encourage things like debates.
I was going to say the same thing. If you do a side-by-side comparison to some of their agendas, they're very similar in a lot of ways with just a little bit of differences. So I think the interesting thing will be, what do they prioritize? And when Cordray hears DeWine say something, how is he – like, what is he different that he thinks should take priority over another thing in Ohio?
We'll continue talking about the midterms coming up on November 6th. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's our weekly reporters roundtable on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Jesse Ballmer, state government reporter for Cincinnati Inquirer, Dayton Daily News correspondent Laura Bischoff, and Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Andy Chow. If you have a question or comment, we're kind of talking politics this hour. There's pretty much politics, politics, politics until the midterms. And after that, it's going to be lame duck, lame duck, lame duck.
Doesn't quite roll off the tongue
as
well.
It does not.
There is a cycle to this life.
In the governor's race, the candidates are statistically tied. Is that what you expected at this point? Or were you expecting something a little bit different, Laura Bischoff?
No, I expect this from the get-go was going to be a close race, particularly if you look at how 8 years ago when they went up against each other in the attorney general's race, it was very close, and DeWine managed to oust Cordray from that office. It's interesting that a lot of the attack lines that they are employing kind of tie back to the attorney general's office. Rich Cordray has hit Mike DeWine because I think about half of the BCI agents, the Bureau of Criminal Identification and Investigation agents, were given or were using expired Kevlar vests.
Which I didn't even know they could expire, so learn something new every day.
Right, but this is a story that Julie Carsmyth, the Associated Press, broke and advanced. And so there's been a lot of talk about that, you know, how could DeWine, you know, be Mr. Law and Order, pro safety forces, and yet he's not giving them the essential safety equipment. That the vests have been ordered. I think they've been delivered, and the union complaint against it, I think, is had been kind of put on hold until the vests arrive. And then, you know, DeWine is attacking Rich Cordray over what he considers a failure to act on rape kits that had been untested for many years. And, you know, these rape kits were...
After a reporter broke the story about the rape kit.
The plane dealer did
piling up.
The plane dealer up in Cleveland did just amazing work on this this issue. And I think like at least half of these kits were sitting on the shelf in Cleveland.
And this broke after the serial killer...
That Anthony Sowell guy.
Right. Was the women... Yeah. Horrible story.
But, you know... Rich Cordray was the attorney general for 2 years. He was filling out the remainder of Mark Dan's term. Mark Dan's term. And, you know, he started the ball rolling in terms of setting up a protocol and getting, you know, to get the kits tested. And then, you know, he was out. And Mike DeWine, a former county prosecutor from Greene County, he, you know, he jumped on it and, you know, put the call out not only to Cleveland but to all the police departments across the state. Like, if you have untested kits, then we want them to send them to BCI and we'll get them tested. And just in February of this year, as the primary started to ramp up, they completed all the testing. And it's been a huge success in terms of tracking down suspects in old cold cases and getting justice for these victims.
So, Anne, you asked earlier, did we expect this to be kind of a tied race? Did we expect it to be so close? And I think I too thought that it was going to be a close race. What surprises me is the way Cordray's campaign is handling issues like this rape kit case. I thought for sure that they would have been out swinging a little bit more and not necessarily attacking DeWine, but attacking his claims on these rape kits and maybe defending Cordray's record a little bit more. But it's just kind of been silent. When Cordray puts out an ad, it's more about his character and he's a good guy. And there's one where he's shooting free throws.
Right,
and it's just
petting a dog or giving it some water or something outside a coffee shop. But when did you stop beating your wife kind of a situation for him? If he tries to raise and defend himself on the rape kits issue, it just.
Yeah, I don't see any winning message on that. Mm-hmm. He is doing this whole Nerds for Cordray campaign, which is kind of quiet. It's more an online thing, but, you know, they're playing up his Jeopardy championship status, and they have, like, him doing his own Ohio trivia questions.
Yeah.
And there's a Twitter feed called Nerds for Cordray. And he does this thing where he reads mean tweets, which actually aren't all that mean.
Yeah, mm-mm. I've seen that. Heard it, yeah.
And so I think it's interesting. We're seeing the same exact kind of campaign that we saw in 2010, where DeWine came out swinging hard about things like rape kits, and Cordray sort of just sits back on his record. And it feels like prevent defense. When you look at polls nationwide about how people feel about Republicans, how people feel about Trump, I think that the thing here is that Cordray's kind of hoping that distaste for what the Republican Party is doing right now and for Trump might just end up being good for him and he doesn't have to do that much.
Speaking of what people feel about the Republican Party, the very notable Les Wexner pretty much trashed the party. I can refresh my memory on what exactly he said. It was harsh. It was to the point. He said, let's see.
He's been a Republican since his days at Ohio State as an undergraduate.
Right, except for when he was honorary chairman of John Glenn's reelection campaign back in the day, which, you know, was a note. But he said he won't support this nonsense in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. That's pretty harsh. And he was very public about it.
I think it was a reporter from Columbus Monthly, I think, who broke the story, said that he was particularly offended with statements from Donald Trump after Charlottesville.
Yes. Mm-hmm. When he said that there's good people on both sides of this.
After the white nationalist rally.
Marched through the streets of Virginia.
Yeah. And one, in fact, drove his car into the crowd of counter demonstrators and
killed that young woman.
Killed a young woman, yeah.
Right.
And it's notable that he, you know, made this decision or announcement after meeting with the former President Barack Obama, who actually had a kind of quiet swing through Columbus before going up to Cleveland to campaign for Rich Cordray. And essentially, Mr. Wexner has said, you know, I'm an independent. I won't support this nonsense in the Republican Party, quoting from the Dispatch article or the Columbus Monthly article. And so he's informed candidates that he's going to take this independent approach. I think what will be interesting is whether his donations trail off, whether he'll start giving money to Democrats or whether he'll continue to give money to Republicans as he has done. In the past, I'm trying to figure out, obviously, this is a statement that is, you know, important in the Ohio political world, but I'm wondering what the actual financial repercussions of this decision will be.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder what's happening behind closed doors, if these are conversations that party leaders, Republican Party leaders, are having with other wealthy donors and wealthy backers.
Who are feeling
I wonder if
squeamish.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if this has been an issue or a problem among other wealthy Republicans.
Well, there's a very wealthy Republican running the party in Ohio.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, no shortage of that. Let's see. Tom in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I just wondered about the Pike County murders with the Rogans and DeWine being attorney general, if Cordray would use that, or if the media would. You know, I haven't heard anybody ask DeWine about it, where they're at on that. I mean, it's just completely unsolved.
Mm-hmm. Right. Interesting question.
That is a case that that the Attorney General's office took the lead on through the BCI agents.
Right away.
And you're right, it's been unsolved for a while. Four or five years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it might be a little shorter than that. But, I have not heard Rich Cordray come up and bring that up. I think that's something that he could bring up in the campaign, but I've heard nothing about that. They are continuing to investigate the last, my colleagues and I spoke with them, and they have spoken, specifically to this family up in Alaska as individuals they want to talk to as part of the case. And so I don't know if it's any closer to resolution. A lot of these things with an open investigation, it's very hard to tell what's happening until it's happening.
It is an interesting thing that. If Cordray wanted to, it could backfire on DeWine because, like we all just said, he jumped on this the day it happened.
Right.
He had a huge press conference and announced himself as the person who's going to lead this investigation and get this thing solved. And I think that's just another example of something that Cordray could be hitting DeWine on that he's not doing right now.
You know, another thing I think that I'm surprised that the Cordray campaign has not been using is the payday lending issue. This is, debated heavily in the legislature. The House Speaker, Cliff Rosenberger, resigned over because there's this FBI investigation having to do with his association with the payday lending industry. Mm-hmm. Rich Cordray spent, 7 years as the head of the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Mm-hmm. The AG's office also has a lot to do with enforcing the Consumer Sales Practices Act. So, it's kind of in his wheelhouse.
So and this what do you is something that's going on then? You're right.
And it affects large swaths of Ohioans. Like there's at least 1 million people a year that take out payday loans.
Even if they don't take out payday loans, people are pretty familiar with the practice of it. They were on every street corner 10 years ago.
There are more payday lending operations in Ohio, at least currently, than there are McDonald's.
I
didn't know that.
And going into this race, I was expecting a lot more rhetoric about a quote-unquote culture of corruption where you have a scandal like ECOT, you have these payday lending issues, and you have a candidate like Rich Cordray, who is head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, who is the main watchdog on things like payday lenders. Mm-hmm. I just think that they're going in a different direction with their campaign, and it's a little bit like I said, prevent defense.
I mean, it's you could say, well, he's just taking the high road right now, and he doesn't have to take shots at. DeWine.
He may have also been part of his strategy. Maybe to kind of reserve his
fodder,
his money, for more of the heavy duty portions of the campaign. He didn't. I mean, we're past Labor Day, so now it's here. Mm-hmm. It's time to, if you're going to take shots.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it fair, given that Mike DeWine has criticized Richard Cordray on what he did regarding the rape test kits during the 2 years he was in office, but would be unfair to question DeWine on something like the Pike County murders and how he managed that in office? Now that DeWine's kind of opened up the gates to that.
I think past performance in especially jobs that you're elected to do by voters is fair game for any election. So we'll see what happens there. I do think to Laura's point, we're not sure the latest cash on hand numbers because those didn't need to be reported. The expenditures didn't need to be reported last time around. But Mike DeWine and John Houston have more money to spend on this than Rich Cordray will, even though they are really neck and neck on the fundraising front. They've just had more time to do it.
Yeah, and the thing is that when Mike DeWine and John Houston joined forces, John Houston came with a big bucket of money. Mm-hmm. And then also, Mike DeWine loaned his campaign, put a personal loan in of $1 million.
Yeah.
And he did that when he ran for AG as well. And then rather than forgive the loan, it got paid back. The campaign paid back the loan to him. And it's unclear whether or not that's going to be the case again.
Yeah. And the only other thing I can think of is Rich Cordray has come out and saying, you know, I want to run this race the quote unquote Ohio way. However, he happens to define that. And so he has come out as saying he wants to run this kind of clean campaign. And does that backfire on his image if he comes out with a bunch of negative ads? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, negative ads work that or they wouldn't keep using them. Right. So I guess they'll use them if they feel like they have to. We haven't talked about any of the down ticket races. One I did want to touch on is the attorney general race. The next attorney general, who it's going to be, and the candidates Steve Dettelbach and Dave Yost, the Republican, Dettelbach, the Democrat. What do we know about where that race stands right now and how they're doing? Is there any? Are there any tea leaves you can read?
I haven't seen any polling or any tea leaves, for that matter. I think that it's an interesting race. There's a lot of talk about culture of corruption in that race and what Dave Yost did or did not do on ECOT. Yost has been saying, look, I'm the regulator as the auditor. I didn't write the rules that allowed ECOT to do all these things. My job was to look at the compliance with the rules as written.
And he won awards from ECOT for doing that.
And he spoke at their graduation. And that, yes. And you will hear the Democrats say that over and over again. Dettelbach is somebody who's not he's not held elective office. He's been appointed into the Department of Justice. He served as the U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Ohio. And as the attorney general, he took on a lot of big cases. I think he went after the Cleveland Police Department for some of its practices and that. It's an interesting matchup between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have two candidates who can position themselves as, the law, or with prosecutorial backgrounds, and so it could get wonky at times, or they could start talking about the issues. But so far, I think it's just been all ECOT all the time, where Dettelbach's been hitting Yost on his past alignment with ECOT.
The Columbus Dispatch came out with an endorsement for a Republican in the Secretary of State's race. Significant? Surprising? Does it matter? Who cares?
Well, it matters. I don't know if their endorsement matters, but yeah. It does matter who is the Secretary of State or who holds these offices. I think Secretary of State, Auditor, Governor are on the Ohio Redistricting Commission.
Right.
So those positions are very powerful going forward. They have this new system set up for congressional and legislative districts that's supposed to keep the districts compact and not look like some sort of splatter shot of this. The districts right now are kind of bizarrely drawn. So I would argue that those races are important.
Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about Republican Frank LaRose, who's currently a senator in the state Senate, and then Representative Kathleen Clyde on the Democratic side. Two people who, while in the General Assembly, both approved and supported the measure to reform the district drawing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in some regards, both of them have been focused on election issues for several years, probably knowing they were going to run for this position. Mm-hmm. And so they both have experience in that. They both have experience in the state legislature. So neither of them are coming out of, left field on these election issues. I think at the end of the day, with Kathleen Clyde, you'd perhaps see rolling back on some of these like so-called voter purge programs to eliminate people if they haven't voted after a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. It really continued by John Husted. It's been a bit of a policy for a bit. So
we are out of time. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News and Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau and Jesse Ballmert of the Cincinnati Inquirer. And you out there listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.